Furuli. Mats Furuli.
You roll the R?
He said, technically the R in Furuli is a rolling R, but since I've been struggling with those my whole life, I won't expect you to do it. That's
right. No, let's do it. I love a roll. Okay.
Furuli.
All right. What's up, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Adam and I, playing in two softball games last night to us bringing home the trophy. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
God, I am still basking in the glow of those two games.
Gosh, it is the greatest sports performance I've ever had in my life across anything ever. Tennis, basketball, baseball, golf, swimming, beach stuff, high school, college, childhood.
For inquiring minds, let me take the opportunity to give Mike his flowers because they are well-deserved and fully in bloom. Dad strength on display in a way that
it's real.
None have ever seen. A literal perfect day. Mike did not get out the entire game. You had yourself at 6-for-6. Tom had you in the recap as 8-for-8. Either way,
it is 6-for-6 because if you don't count walks. So I had 8 plate appearances, and then I had 8 times where I got on base. 6 of them were hits, 2 of them were walks.
He made probably 20 plays in left field over the course of 2 games, all of which were fielded perfectly, including throwing out a runner who was trying to take an extra base, which is a huge play in the game. A wild, like, evasive slide to get back into first base after like a broken play that, like, had you been called out there or thrown out, that would have like really impacted the momentum that inning.
Yeah.
So yeah, I did not have quite as stellar of a day, but I feel like I had a good day.
Oh, you still did. You had a huge clutch RBI hit. You had some wonderful scoops at first base to save things. And on the field that we were playing on, there's no fence backstop. So if you miss any of the throws your way, that goes from being an out into a double and can move the runners up 2 bases each if any other runner is on.
Yeah.
So you had some huge plays there. It was great. Our whole team played really well, which was really cool. And I got to say, you know, people were very kind, and a couple of different people were saying, like, I was the MVP of the games. People were saying, you know, oh, you should get the game ball, whatever. But I know deep down I can't give myself the MVP because the true MVP was AJ for not showing up this whole fucking season.
Let's go.
I am so glad he didn't show up. I'm so glad we won in his absence. And I'm so glad that multiple people replied to me on Instagram when I posted about us winning. Multiple people unprompted were like, fuck you, AJ.
I like that it's become the only reason that this podcast is listed as explicit. It's just us saying, fuck you, AJ, every episode. There's no other reason. We're not really profane beyond that.
No, we've been clean pretty well, but when it comes for AJ, fuck him. So glad he's not on the team. Huge win, but
the biggest addition by subtraction maybe ever.
I can't think of a more significant one, but like truly the vibes of our team were off the charts, and I think it's because he wasn't around, and it was just so fun, and I'm so glad we won, and dad powers kicked in at just the right time, and I'm feeling great. And I am so glad that we got to experience that. And hey, summer season's right here.
Yeah.
Let's go back to back.
And you know what? We actually sprayed a bunch of champagne all over the place. Do you know where we sprayed it?
Oh, in the Teal Memorial locker room. Thank you. What a transition. That's fantastic. I was tempted to bring a bottle of champagne to the game in case we won, but I was like, if there's ever a jinx, it's that.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And there would be nothing more depressing than to have a unopened bottle of champagne, like, just bring it back home and put it in my cabinet. Like, oh,
no.
Just the lost champagne forever. I'd have to pour it out. Yeah. So I'm glad I didn't do that. Also because there was a wild torrential storm that started immediately after our game ended.
I got home just in time. I imagine you didn't.
Yeah. I ended up like getting to, because I take the ferry home, I got to the like highway overpass on 96th as it got to the worst. Mm. And then I was there early enough to wait it out until it got a little bit better. And then I went on to the ferry. But yeah, it was wild. So we didn't even have the ability to celebrate. We also got kicked out of the park because they closed the baseball fields at 8 o'clock sharp. So we were all like, yeah, you're celebrating. And then the park was like, leave. Anyway, this is a basketball podcast. We're in the Till Memorial locker room. Let's get ready. You know who else is celebrating with us? Because I know some of these people are some who replied saying positive things about us and negative things
about
AJ.
I would say it's our patrons, specifically our producer level patrons. And we actually have a new producer level patron. We want to give a quick apology. This person has been a producer level patron for longer than we realized, but sometimes Patreon is weird about notifying us, yada, yada, yada. All to say thank you to our latest producer level patron. Take it away, Mike.
Mats Furli, they say. Mats like Mats, the apple juice company, and Furli, Fu like Kung Fu, like the first part, but with an R. Li like the name Lee. Technically, the R in Furli is a rolling R, but since I've been struggling with those my whole life, I won't expect you to do
think
it.
It's
I love a rolling R.
Furli or Furuli?
Ah, I would guess Furli because they are not Italian. Mats attended the show in Oslo that I did. So I.
Yes.
And but hey, you can give us step two of pronunciation.
Exactly.
Where do we stress it? But shout out to Mats and shout out to our existing producer level patrons: Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry is investing in seltzer.
Yeah, just something that I learned. And frankly, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel for Steph Curry references that are different every episode. So I gotta do what I gotta do.
I didn't know that. Look, he's sponsored by water. Now he's doing seltzer. Look at him go.
There you go.
Hi, Trish. Chase Underulo. Haley Zink. Naked Rachel. Sidney Crosby as a vampire. Chelsea's cousin. Ginger Spurs boy. Balls to the balls. Artie Party. And now Mats Furli. And you know who else is helping with the celebrations of our softball victory?
I tell you what. If you want a cocktail to celebrate, I think Shaker and Spoon is the way to go.
Shaker and Spoon is the way to go. You can go to shakerandspoon.com/wars. You can get $20 off a box, and that box helps you make drinks. All you got to do is supply the alcohol. They give you all the other stuff, the ingredients, the instructions, all that, and then you can make some stuff. And like, look, I would have enjoyed to have had a Shaker and Spoon box because I came home and I was like, I need something, and I had a lone beer in the fridge that was just chilling there for months on end because I don't really drink beer alone, and it was there, and I was like, cool, I'll have this celebratory beer. But you know what would have been cooler? A fancy schmance cocktail. So if you want to do that, you can go to shakerandspoon.com/horse. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon, where you get access to ad-free episodes, you're going to hear words from a few sponsors who make it feasible for us to do this and make the podcast not an active red situation because it does cost money to do this show. And once his ads are complete, we'll get back into this episode of Horse. All right, Adam, we're back. Quickly, what is going on in your life with Steph?
Yeah, not a whole lot of new stuff to report. I still have the upcoming shows in Denver. That's Thursday, July 18th. All the tickets and stuff are going to be at my socials, Linktree, all that. If you know my name, it's not hard to find. I'll be at Vermont Comedy Club in Burlington, Vermont. That is on Sunday, August 11th, I believe the date is. And then I'm going to be doing a bunch of shows in New Mexico, specifically Albuquerque, the weekend of September 26th through 28th, and more stuff to come. Do you have anything new, or is it the same LeakyCon and whatnot?
Yeah, so I've got LeakyCon, and then I've got those other shows around it. So July 3rd, we've got Seattle. July 8th, we've got Vancouver, BC, and then LeakyCon in between in Portland, and then some other shows as well. You can go to schub.es/tour. I'm also looking to add some other shows later in the year that haven't been confirmed, so just stay tuned there and follow me on social media to make sure I don't miss any of that stuff. And I'm also going to be recording video from those Pacific Northwest shows and putting it up on the TNO Patreon. So if you don't live in those areas and you want to see the video versions early before the episodes release, you can go and check that out.
Very cool.
I think now, do we have an NB Q&A, or should we just get into Full Court Press?
We're going to skip it for today because we have a very fun and reasonably long interview that I think you all will enjoy coming up. So we're going to do no NB Q&A today, a fairly abbreviated Full Court Press, and then we're going to get to that interview.
Yeah, so Full Court Press, get it like the news. I feel like my timeline is all out of whack because we did the things on Patreon, but the Celtics won the championship. Have we talked about it on the podcast
yet?
We
have not talked about it on the podcast. The last time we recorded, the Celtics were up 3-1, I believe, or maybe 3-0. But yeah, Celtics won the championship. Congrats to them. Jason Tatum, not a real person. He seems to just copy things from people. It's all very strange. I don't dislike Jason Tatum, but it just kind of...
No. Yeah, just him mimicking four other dudes championship celebrations is very weird. It feels very forced and stuff. So I don't know. Shout out to Jaylen Brown for winning Finals MVP. That's very cool. And like, as much as I want to be a Celtics hater, as a New York sports fan, there are some cool things about this. Like, the Jays have gone through a bunch of weird media stuff where people have tried to drive a wedge between them. It's cool for the two of them to win. Al Horford winning a title is cool. Holiday proving that he's still a very valuable NBA player is cool. Chris Stapps winning a title after like maturing a lot after his Knicks situation, like that's cool. Him playing through that injury, which is super weird and wild, and they just reported he'll be out for like 6 months. Wow. Him playing in game five, cool. Derek White chipping his tooth and then still playing and winning, cool. Like, it is frustrating how enjoyable the team is given that they are the Celtics, but like, as grumpy as I want to be, there's some cool stuff to
and they genuinely admire. They were the best team all season long. They proved that in the playoffs. Did they get some breaks in terms of like facing injured teams? Sure. But my personal opinion is like, I think they would have gotten through the East anyway. They just might have been more tired when they got to the finals. Who can say? But that's a perfect transition into saying who might challenge them next year. Your New York Knicks, who traded for Mikal Bridges. How are we feeling?
Yeah, dude, this is pretty good. Oh, I'm feeling great on multiple levels. There's a lot of different things. So for context, we're recording this June 27th. The NBA draft happened last night. And right before that, there was a huge trade in that my beloved New York Knickerbockers traded basically like five first round picks for Mikal Bridges of the Brooklyn Nets. As a Brooklyn hater, this is huge for me because it's just extra salt in the wound of the Brooklyn Nets. But Mikal Bridges is this guy who's very good and got traded to the Nets in the Kevin Durant trade. And the Nets just like, I don't really, they weren't really doing anything with him. They thought they could use him as a way for people to want to play with him. He doesn't really have that star gravity. So he apparently was ready to force his way to the Knicks, which is like, you want proof that the Knicks are back. Someone's forcing their way to the Knicks. The Knicks are back, baby.
Yeah.
So before it got to that situation, the Knicks and Nets made a trade. People have said that it's a bit of an overpay. I think it is probably for his caliber of play. But when you factor in how well he fits on our team, and our sort of restrictions of what we can do and some other outside factors in that, like, we have Dante DiVincenzo on a steal of a contract and we have Deuce McBride on a steal of a contract. Like, when some things go well, you can have some leeway for splurging on things that just like make your team perfect. And not only is he a perfect basketball fit, but he's another Villanova guy. He was on that championship team with Hart, Brunson, and DiVincenzo.
Honestly, just bring back Archie Diacono. Just bring him on like a minimum contract.
We've done it before. Yeah. Like, when he was on the team last year, it was bringing him back. So like, we might do it again. He only got traded to make like contracts work with the Pistons deal. So we might have five Nova guys if we bring him back. But I think that having him is very cool. It's so funny that like the year-long thing where Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson were just like very openly bullying him into coming on the Knicks. The fact that it actually worked is hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, I have active text messages where I've told friends like, it would be really good, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. Like, the Nets don't want to make the trade and we would just have to give up too much. And we didn't. And we gave up picks and we made it work and he's on the team and it's so funny and also great basketball. And then we re-signed OG Anunoby. So that's very cool. Again, probably paid him a little more than he's worth, but like, you got to do what you got to do. And we'll see if we bring back Isaiah Hartenstein or not. But like, regardless, getting those two guys, Tibbs is in heaven. We're going to be so good on defense. Yeah. It's wild.
Oh, yeah. Now, before we wrap up Full Court Press, we're going to talk a lot of WNBA stuff with our guests who are going to introduce in a little bit. We also, I think we can dive deeper into the NBA draft in a future episode, but
we'll do a future episode where we kind of like recap some playoff stuff that we didn't get to and then also talk about the draft. Because right now, like, the NBA is going to be on ice for a little bit. So like, let's shift to the W. It's important to talk about this episode.
But we would be remiss if we didn't talk about JJ Redick, who is now the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. There was a lot of speculation that this might happen. It did happen. JJ Redick has said that he and LeBron never talked about it, which is one of the most absurd lies I've ever heard, maybe. But yes, he is coaching. His previous coaching experience includes coaching nine-year-olds, and now he's coaching in the NBA. So we'll see how that works for them. What are your quick thoughts before we get to our interview?
I'm a huge JJ fan. I always liked him as a player, loved him in Duke, really rooted for him in the NBA. Every time I made an NBA 2K franchise, I got JJ Redick on the team every single time. I'm excited to see him be a coach. I think the Lakers is not a good spot for him because there's so much media pressure. But look, if you're going to get the job, take it. Like, you don't say no.
For sure.
I will be very sad for my future podcast listening, because his podcast with LeBron James was very good and I very much enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And JJ's other podcast, Old Man 3, is pretty solid too. So I will miss, and I liked him on broadcasting and stuff. Like, I will miss his other content, but if he's able to be a good coach, that'll be very cool. I was a bit, I don't know if you saw the thing where someone who used to work for Duke said, I think a black woman said that he called her the N-word back in the Duke days.
I did see that, obviously, like, a concerning thing.
That's not what you want. We'll see if that develops further, but, like, she seems like, hey, she made the tweet. It didn't seem like it was, like, a, we gotta cancel this guy tweet. It was more of just, like, a, you know, sucks that someone who did a shitty thing to me is in a great position kind of thing. And then she even, like, replied later saying, like, it's in the past. I know people can grow, whatever.
What's interesting about it, and I'm not discounting it, but, like, he was in the NBA for 15 years. Like, I guess I'm a little surprised that it wouldn't have come out by now.
That's why I think, like, the way she tweeted it, it just felt like, you know, it didn't feel like a targeted, like, I've been waiting for the moment to drop the bombshell.
Sure.
It just seemed like, the way it was written was more of just like a, it was phrased something effective like, huh, that moment when the only person who's ever called you an N-word to your face, like, now is the coach of the Lakers. Like, it, you know, it's sassy, but not like, this is a JJ Redick takedown intentional tweet.
Yeah, and I don't know that he said anything about it, not that I've seen.
It was like through a spokesperson said that it never happened, which is, I don't know, like, what does she have to gain from lying? Like, it would be weirder if she was, like, I don't know what she did at Duke, but, like, it's weird that she wasn't a stranger to him. Not that that makes it better, but, like, makes it even weirder that he would say to someone if he knew her. I don't know. But we'll see if that further develops. But in terms of, like, JJ Redick being a coach, I like him. I think he is smart. I don't know if he'll be very good, because we've seen it flame out with, like, first-time coaches really fresh off of retiring, like Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, not do well. But then, like, Jason Kidd's, I guess, good now. And, like, Steve Kerr, he was good, but he had a GM job in between, so it's hard to say. But I don't know. We'll have to see. And I think it's at least interesting, and I'm glad it's happening on the Lakers, because they're already a stupid, dramatic team.
Yeah.
So let's add more stupid drama.
Totally into it.
And it'll be great content for us.
Yes,
we'll have a lot to say about it.
That
so
goes without saying.
A plus.
But with that, shall we get into our interview?
Let's do that. We will talk more about NBA stuff later, but for now, we're going to have a lovely conversation with Jordan. We already had the conversation. We're recording this afterwards. It's great. You're going to love it. We touched on a lot of different things, from silly WNBA stuff to serious to on-court to off-court to everything in between. It's a fun chat. Enjoy. Yes, hello. As promised, we are here with a very special interview, a fun annual tradition where we have our resident horse, WNBA expert Jordan Robinson, come on to tell us about everything that's going on in the WNBA, tell you all what's going on, what to look out for as the season continues. You might know her from her incredible work co-hosting Queens of the Court with Cheryl Swoops. Yes, that Cheryl Swoops. But it's that Jordan Robinson. Jordan, how's it going?
It's going great. Thanks for having me. I love that this is an annual tradition. Please, let's keep it going.
It's so fun.
Yeah, I believe last year we gave you your Five Timers Club jacket. So this, I mean, six doesn't feel as exciting, but when we get to 10, we're going to roll out the red carpet for you.
Yay! I can't wait. I still love my jersey that I have.
Yes.
I'm not new to this, I should say.
Truly, truly. Well, we're recording this one on June 27th. So at this point in time, the NBA draft is done. We can stop talking about men NBA. We got to talk about the WNBA. Things are fun. There are interesting things going on the court. There are interesting things going on off the court. There's uninteresting things happening that talking heads on various ESPN-related programs want to pretend is interesting. And these folks have watched 0 minutes of WNBA basketball, clearly. But just to start it off the top, so far in the season, what has been your favorite thing? It can be a team playing well. It can be any sort of off-court antics. It can be Nika Mule wearing a t-shirt with her photo of her visa on it.
It can be Monica McNutt handing Stephen A. Smith his ass. It can be whatever you want it to be.
All of the above, honestly. Every single day that I open my eyes, there is a new opportunity for a favorite thing to happen, because I just feel like, you know, we talk about me coming on the show for many seasons, many years. how many times was I like, you guys got to watch the WNBA. It's so cool. It's amazing. Look at all these cool players. Look what everyone's doing. And now I sit here like, okay, let's reel it back. Maybe not everybody tune in and watch the WNBA because it's getting out of hand. But I think my favorite thing has been this new wave of fans coming in, and whether they came in for Caitlin Clark or they came in for Angel Reese and all of the exciting moments that the Final Four brought us, these new fans are being introduced to people like Breanna Stewart and Asia Wilson and players, Nafisa Collier, players who we knew were ballers. And if you have been watching and been paying attention, you also know that they can hoop. But these new fans coming in like, dang, who's this Breanna Stewart on the Liberty? Like, she's like a woman Kevin Durant. Like, what can't she do? And that's what gets me excited, because I feel like I'm experiencing the WNBA for a new, like for the first time with fresh set of eyes. With that comes a lot of horrible things and people with really bad takes, but I'm trying to stay positive and use the positivity of it, is that they are getting introduced to superstars who are much better than they could have ever thought when they thought of the WNBA.
Yeah. You know, it's almost a little bit like when there's like a lifetime actor who's just like killing it in everything, but they're not a household name, and then all of a sudden like they're in some hit TV show and everyone's like, where'd this person come from? It's like, no, they've been great for 30 years, like you just
exactly
somehow didn't know about it before then. But yeah, it's cool to see. And I got to go to a Liberty game with my mom, who I've brought up before. It was like,
yes,
it had become her dream to go to a WNBA game. And so we went to it was the Liberty Mystics game, where the Mystics actually made it like weirdly closer than it should have been.
Mystics are good.
But it was electric. I mean, it was like, it did feel to me like there were a lot of people who were new fans based on like previous games that I've been to. But I guess it's like one of those like a rising tide helps all ships sort of things. Like, yes, part of what comes with it is that there's going to be idiots with hot takes on Barstool. But like, largely, I feel like things are very positive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I agree. I think things are positive. And I think like, there is a, what better testament than the league is like actually gaining popularity than idiots in the comments? Like,
sure.
It brings me joy that the comments on like WNBA, Instagram and stuff like that, instead of being, who cares, whatever, go to the kitchen, at least it's like uninformed basketball takes.
Yes,
like it's an improvement.
We've made it. People are making old school memes. Like, they're not even resurfacing memes. They're recreating them with WNBA players. Like, we have arrived. And I used to cringe, especially like a Bleacher Report tweet or, you know, a post that has a WNBA matchup. And it would be, you know, all of the typical troll comments. But now it's like, well, they're not better than Angel Reese, or they got to see Caitlin's going to score on her. I'm like, oh, we're talking about basketball here. I love it here. So I know that we have come so far, but I think it's just a whiplash. Like, it's such a jolt from these last couple years that we, people who are in the media and who have been covering it nonstop, it just feels like, okay, whoa, this is what we wanted, but we got here really fast and we're all just trying to recover slowly.
<Right. laughs> For you specifically hosting a podcast like Queens of the Court, where I would assume most of the listeners were people who were interested in WNBA before the season, people who have more genuine interest and not just people who might, you know, I mean, maybe some new listeners are kind of the Caitlin Clarks only, but I would feel like your listener base is not the Barstool Sports idiots that don't know what they're talking about. Have you noticed a difference in, you know, like actual fans or just like the actual audience of people interested? Because attendance numbers alone would make it seem like, sure, there's the crap that we have to deal with people who don't know what they're talking about. But also, it does seem like there's just more people either excited about it or people who care. Is there a positive offset to the bad stuff?
Absolutely. So a couple years ago now, me and my husband went to the opening night of the Sparks, and it was crickets. And I was, you know, back then, the Sparks weren't as bad as they were now. Like, they were pretty decent. Right. And I sat there and I said to him, and I said, I just don't think people know this is happening right now. Like, it's not that the product is bad. It's not that we're in LA. It's just I don't think people know. And what the positive kickback has been is people are reminded, like, hey, okay, we don't have Caitlin Clark. We don't live in Indiana, but we have the Sparks, like, right down the street. Let's go to a game. Let's watch whoever comes into town. And that's what we are seeing, the ripple effects from every single arena. Yes, Caitlin Clark is selling out arenas, but the Aces are also selling out arenas. And the Sparks had 19,000 in attendance. And Atlanta. So it's across the country where people are just reminded about the WNBA and reminded of the high level of basketball that's in their backyard. And also this whole notion of, okay, the NBA is over. I am a Lakers fan or a Clippers fan. I still want to go watch basketball. The Sparks are here and in town, and I don't have to have an off month at all of basketball throughout my year. So it just seeing that from a couple years ago to now, it's just that reminder of the WNBA is here. And oh yeah, I did used to watch this, like, back when Maya Moore was playing or back when the Lynx had their dynasty. Maybe I can get back into it. And that's also exciting because they're not necessarily new fans, just, I don't know, revamped fans, fans who needed that little push back in this direction.
Yeah, for a brief segue, since you brought up the Sparks, I did want to ask you about this, since I know, you know, you've seen the team, you follow the team. What's up with the yellow jerseys with the weird font? Can we talk about the weird Los Angeles font that looks like they just, like, ripped something? It looks like when you're scrolling an Instagram and you pick one of the weird texts. Like, what are we doing here? I'm so confused by their yellow jerseys. Where is this font coming from?
You know, it's like kind of a nod to the old school Sparks font, which was the Lakers font, kind of.
Well, they have the one that, like, looks like the traditional, like, Lakers font, which I think makes sense.
Yeah.
But then they have the yellow ones where it's just, like, very, like, block texty Los Angeles.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. You know?
Like, I'm all for the Sparks not just trying to be the women Lakers.
Right.
Like, that's okay, but I think the graphics design department needs a slight assist here.
Yeah, I feel that. There's a lot of things I need to be upgraded with the Sparks, so we don't even have to go down that hole unless you want to.
Look, step at a time. Derek Fisher's out the door, you know?
You know, I can only get one wish granted at a time, so I guess maybe by next year annually, the jerseys will be better.
There we go. That would be nice.
I think one thing that my hope is that, like, yes, if you're watching First Take or any sort of, like, sports broadcast that is now talking about the WNBA and, like, wasn't even a year ago, there are going to be some bad takes, but my hope is that people will now be consuming that much more media, and hopefully they will be like, oh, do I agree with this or not? Let me actually watch some games. Let me look into it myself. And I think what that's leading to is that, like, the new WNBA fan is not always who you think it would be. And it's not necessarily, like, the same fan that there was a couple of years ago. And I bring that up because literally this past Sunday, as we record this, there was the Fever Sky game on. Now, that was happening at the same exact time as a bunch of, like, soccer matches that people were very invested in. My girlfriend and I are at this bar, and we did wait until, like, one of the big matches was over. But as soon as it was over, we, like, asked the bartender, hey, can you put on ESPN so we can watch the end of this game? Now, in my mind, I'm already preparing myself for the row of men sitting at the bar to be like, what the hell is this? Mm-hmm. Not only did that not happen, they were all, like, immediately enthralled by it. And there's this guy sitting to our left who is, like, exactly who you would think, if you're stereotyping, would have, like, a meathead take about the WNBA. He's, like, got, like, a camouflage hat on. He's got a shirt that says, like, you know, so-and-so and Sons Painting and Roofing. He's drinking a Guinness. The game comes on, and all of a sudden, he can tell we're into it, and he turns to us and, without anything, goes, like, man, I just think it's really, really shitty that Angel Reese didn't really take accountability for what happened with Caitlin. Like, he had, like, an extreme take about, like, it was not cool at the press conference, how she didn't answer any questions, and, like, you know, Kennedy Carter, like, muted her Instagram. I was like, what world am I living in? This is great. I don't even need to, like, agree with that take, but the fact that you have one that seems informed, it was fun.
You know, and that's what happens in the NBA every single day. And as much as it is a lot for us to get used to being in the WNBA space, like, how you can just scroll, just drop into Twitter, and someone is going to be like, LeBron isn't better than MJ, or Luka could give you 50 tomorrow to just a random scrub. Like,
right.
That is the discourse, unfortunately, in the social media world. But when it goes outside of social media, that's when we really start getting at it, because then you can have those conversations. Like, I've been at family parties giving my stance of why Kobe is better than LeBron, and I'm listing out facts, and I'm pulling up stats, and I'm pulling up basketball reference and all of that. Now we're going to get to that, to the WNBA, because normally I'm just having those like with myself, or I'm more of informing, like, hey, this is who Angel Reese is. Look, she's got 8 straight double-doubles. She came from LSU, got them their first championship. But if you can come with that basic knowledge, and now we're getting into, okay, Caitlin versus Angel isn't a real debate because they play different positions. It's going to be the teams. How are the teams stacked against each other? Put the coaches against each other. Now we get to start talking about the nuances of hoops, and that's where basketball fans like to live, because the trolls, they're going to weed themselves out because they just know the Stephen A talking points or the ESPN talking points. But once you start watching the games, watching the highlights, watching the clips, then we can actually start having conversations, and that's when it gets fun to me.
Yeah, totally. And I think it could get more fun. The timing of this particular season happening this year, where there's more eyes on it, this being an Olympics year, I hope that people finally watch what is always like appointment viewing for me. It's like, hi, do you want to watch America destroy the ever-living shit out of every other country in a sport? Because, like, when's the last time the women's team lost a game? Like, 1998 or something? Like, I don't... It's been... such a long time since they haven't needed a redeem team.
There's nothing to
redeem. No,
not at all.
I guess the 96 team was kind of that redeem team, but it's been that was 96 and we are in 2024. Yeah. You know, talking with Cheryl about the whole Olympics conversation, Cheryl Swoops, she was basically saying, you know, look, the minimum requirement is gold. She said, if you bring back gold or you don't come back, like, you will live in Paris. Like, that is a standard. But I want to say, too, just from that comment and, you know, a lot of the discourse about Caitlin Clark being left off the Olympic team and, you know, they're going to win anyway. Just put her on because it'll be popular. Everyone else is getting better in the world, too. So we can't ignore that. When we look at the WNBA, when we look at the international talent that is in the league, they all go to their respective teams and ball out for them during the Olympics. You have a team
Ezzie Magbukor is going to Australia.
You have Australia. That's exactly who I was going to say, who has a lot of those people in the WNBA who are going up against those, you know, the USA team every day, or have them as teammates. So no, have that in. You have Emma Messiman, who is a baller. And, you know, there's just so many teams. They don't have a complete team like the USA, but we go back to the Olympic qualifiers. USA didn't, you know, skate by. They won on a buzzer beater shot by Breanna Stewart. So we have this idea of history, you know, being in favor for the USA team, but everyone else is adding people, getting better, and trying to beat USA. So it's kind of just, it's idiotic for someone to say, put Caitlin on the team just because, you don't, you know, she'll put some points up, she'll ride the bench, but people are going to be watching only because of Caitlin Clark. And you're like, look at this team. Look at this roster. Are you kidding me?
That's the thing. It's such a stacked roster. And when does the WNBA All-Star game happen? Because they are doing the USA team versus All-Stars game again.
Yes.
So maybe people will get a little preview of, like, look how stacked our Olympic roster is. And also, like, Caitlin for sure is going to get voted in to the other team. So maybe they'll see, like, oh.
Well, that could go one or two ways. And that is why I'm really excited for it. So the All-Star game is, I think, July 19th.
Okay. My calendar. It is sold out, which I saw, which is pretty cool.
It's like, really, really cool. So July 19th through 21st, that's All-Star Weekend in Phoenix. And so this is their second time doing all WNBA team versus Team USA. Previously, when it's an Olympic year, they just don't have an All-Star game because they just give everybody a break. But I love this because the last time it happened, Team WNBA beat the Olympic team. And Arike Ogunbowale took home the MVP after everyone was saying she got snubbed from the Olympic team. She went out and dropped like 30. So that is the conversation I wish we're having, is that Caitlin could potentially come out and drop 30 on the Olympic team, take home the MVP, and be like, I told you so. Like, that could be the storyline. Or it could be an Olympic team just destroying an all WNBA team and saying, look, we have this spot for a reason. Whatever happens is going to be wonderful and great, because that's going to get people talking and build momentum into the Olympics.
I think it's fun because, even Caitlin aside, like, there's other people who feel like they're snubbed. Like, Neko Ogumike could be like, why am I not on this team? And she'll be an all-star. And then, like, maybe she balls out. I think there's...
That begs the question, though. Like, if someone gets injured between now and the Olympics, who would the person be to fill that spot?
I know. I don't even want to think about that, because Cameron Brink tearing her ACL.
Brutal.
She
was on the 3x3 team. She was on the 3x3 team.
Funk. The whole day. Like, I felt like my Olympic dreams were crushed. Like, that was... horrible. Ryan Howard has an ankle injury right now. She's also on the 3x3 team. So I'm like, okay, people, just, I kind of don't want them to play anymore. Like, this is, Olympics are huge rather than these regular season games. So, like, just limit their minutes. But yeah, you know, does beg the question. With 3x3, it was a little different. De'Erica Hamby filled in the role for Cameron Brink, because with 3x3, I also do play-by-play for FIBA 3x3. Right. And you have to have a certain amount of points, certain amount of, like, qualifying games. So you can't just kind of slide in there for the Olympics. And the same thing that was said for the national team, you know, were you at training camp? Did you play in the qualifying tournament? All of that works with chemistry for 5-on-5. We're not just going to drop someone in there and then everybody doesn't know what to do. You don't know Cheryl Vree's system. Like, there's just a lot at stake. So why risk it? But if there's an injury, a lot of people were saying, you know, Chelsea Gray, if she doesn't come back in time, who was going to fill her spot? Arike Ogunbowale actually withdrew her name from consideration because she didn't want to be involved with all the politics of the Olympics, which I think was really dumb, because that basically says you're never going to be on the Olympic team. And she's too good of a player to do that. But so it's not going to be Arike. Then you just kind of start going down the line. And at one point, do you get to Caitlin Clark? If it is a guard position, it has to be that position, whoever is injured. But I don't even want to think of that. I just want everyone to be healthy and everyone go win gold and fulfill their dreams.
I mean, I feel like at best she would be like the role that Christian Laettner had on the dream team. Like, he was there, but like, he wasn't involved really.
Yeah, and that's a whole other thing. Are people going to be upset about that? Are we going to be clocking playing time in the Olympics and questioning Cheryl Reeves' rotations when it comes to gold? Like, that's also, I would be really annoyed if that took precedent over, you know, Asia Wilson balling out every single game, but it's more of Caitlin not playing. I don't even want that.
Yeah, let's hope for a nice, boring,
straight line through.
Straight line, exciting basketball, nothing else. Yes. Look at all these wins, look at these points.
Now, I have a question that I feel like I should know the answer to, but if I don't know it, that means some of our listeners probably don't. Given that the Olympics are happening like in the midst of the WNBA season, the games just go on, right? It's not like the season like pauses and the Olympics happen. Like, a bunch of teams just have to play without their best players.
So, no, the season does pause.
It does pause. Okay.
Yes, pause. So it is like so All-Star is the start of quote-unquote Olympic break.
Okay.
So then it's going to be all the teams get a rest and they are just like on an extended All-Star break, I guess. And then they come back and resume. But now what we saw last year, or the last Olympics, they actually had the Commissioner's Cup game as soon as all the Olympians came back, and they just looked so dead and tired and it was horrible and not good for anyone to watch. So I think that's going to be something, is the Olympians do not have a break. So they are just going through. They have been playing all year round, and they get to that end of the Olympic break, have to start back up for a playoff push. Like, it's not just normal games now. It's like, okay, all these games really, really matter. A lot of people who are injured now, they're saying they'll be back after the Olympic break. So that extended rest period is also going to be beneficial for people coming back from injuries. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of sets a little reset button on the season.
Yeah. And with the playoff push, I think it'll be interesting because the way that the league has kind of shaken out standings wise has been fascinating, because I felt like last season was kind of like, we've got the Suns, the Liberty, and the Aces, mm-hmm. and everyone else is here too. Mm-hmm. And now, like, there does seem to still be kind of like a divide between the contenders and the non-contenders, but the Liberty are 15-3, the Sun are 13-3, the Lynx are 13-3, my beloved Seattle Storm are 10-6. The Aces are only 8-6, but they've been doing better. The Mercury are 8-8. So we only have five teams that are above 500, mm-hmm. and then one team at 500. So it's been an interesting sort of divide. And I wonder if you have any sort of like insight as to, like, you know, the answer could just be the players. But when you look at the teams who are doing well this year, it's the teams that have kind of like that historic franchise success, where it's like the Liberty put in a ton of effort. They've been around for so long. They've been yelled at for trying to fly people on private planes. The Aces are trying to use Las Vegas tourism money to illegally pay their players. Like, the Storm made a new workout facility just for them. Like, the Lynx obviously had a huge dynasty. The Sun have been contenders for as long as I can remember. Do you think there is like becoming a bit of a correlation between like how much a team gives a damn as an organization and then team success? Or is it purely just like, well, these six teams have the best players, that's where they're the best six teams?
I would say a little bit of both. I would say what you see from those top halves is a lot of vets, a lot of veteran leadership. And that's why it's going to be really interesting in like 5 years, because it might flip-flop. You know, the youngins are going to come in and they're already making noise, but give them a couple more years to get it under their belt. And I think it's going to be really exciting. But right now there is a divide. Not saying, I think what's so hard with the only having 12 teams, the rest of the teams aren't bad. The other teams are just better. Like, you look at right. Washington Mystics, they're not a bad team. They're hanging in with these yeah. players, with these teams. They started 0-12, 0-11, something crazy. Mm-hmm. They're a really good team. The other teams are just better. So when you frame it like that, no one's technically bad. But yeah. when you have that kind of history behind it, just knowing what it takes to win, what pieces you need. You also see a lot of these teams just making really smart moves in the offseason. The Liberty, of course, became the whole super team trope last year, but they had that whole year and now they look really, really good. Like, they yeah. are able to have that chemistry that was maybe missing in those beginning games. I think the Storm, having that practice facility, we saw what it did for the Aces. Putting money into teams, turns out it works. They actually really like working out and not at like local high schools. That's crazy. My favorite thing about that is it's going to be put up or shut up. Like, we're really close yes. to that, where Chicago as a franchise is going to be like, okay, what do we do? Nobody came here in free agency. No one wanted to play at a college. They wanted their own arena. They wanted their own locker room. They wanted a practice facility. We don't have any of that. If we want to start winning games, even though they just won a championship a few years ago without any of that, they got to make sure that they can put up the money, bring someone in that's going to bring money. The Phoenix Mercury got a whole, just a wipeout of all these young dudes in here. Just like, how can we get all this money and pour into our team? Because we want to win. Every team is going to have to do that. And that's what happened in the NBA historically. You know, talking about charter flights, only one team had a charter flight and they made it all the way to the finals. And then the rest of the teams were like, hey, you guys won when you didn't have to do commercial and squinch on those small planes. How can we get a plane? And that's what it's going to take to invest. The eyes are great and there are dollars, you know, advertisements and sponsorships. But now it's going to be on the owners to say, okay, who's next? Because the Aces, it's working. Storm, it's working. Phoenix, it's working. We got to be in the mix.
Yeah. Do you think the new owners of the new expansion teams are going to like come in firing right off the gate and then they might even just become instant contenders just because they, again, they give a damn?
Yeah. There's already some tea. A lot of people don't really know how the expansion drafts work.
I was about to ask. I don't think I've ever like been a very active WNBA fan the last time there was an expansion. So
yeah,
like,
the last
but
time.
But I love the drama of an expansion draft.
It's going to be so much drama. We're going to break it down soon in a Queens of the Court episode. But the last expansion draft was 2008, I think, the Atlanta Dream. So a lot of people are putting like Paige Bueckers, you know, out of UConn, top projected pick, future number one pick when she comes out next season. They're putting her in a Valkyries jersey. You know, they're mocking it up, Photoshop. But that's not how it works. They're not going to get the number one pick. They're going to basically get their pickings from every team. They're going to get to pick. If these are remaining the same rules from 2008, they're going to get to pick people from all 12 teams. And those teams, so if I'm the Sparks, I'm going to lock down some of my best people and sign people that I don't want them to take. It's like a board game. It feels like it. And so the Valkyries are going to get to go shopping and pick their people. But it's clearly not going to be enough to stop a Liberty, Aces, Connecticut Sun, who's already stacked. So they're going to be really, really bad that first year. And then they're going to get a top pick the next year because they're going to be bad. That's what's kind of been historically happening. Then they get a star with a bunch of bad teams. And then you factor in the part of about the money. Now you have people like Nelissa Smith, who's on Indiana Fever, saying, well, I look good in purple. Like, I want to rock a purple jersey for the Valkyries. I like the Bay Area. And you have already what we see that this organization has done for the Warriors, and you see Chase Center, and you see the Bay Area rallying around the Valkyries. So it looks really, you know, appetizing from the jump, which I don't think a lot of franchises back in the day, it was more like, ride with us. We're going to get there one day. We'll pay you $5 now, but $10 tomorrow. And that's not the vibe now. And I think Toronto is going to be the same exact way.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think for two cities for the expansion, I think it works to have like Toronto always has had really solid fans with the Raptors. And, you know, they're already trying to embrace the like we're all of Canada's team kind of thing. So I think they're going to come out firing. And I think the flip with the Golden State, I think it's less about because obviously you still have the passionate fans, but they're more of the like, as you pointed out, the established ownership that can, you know, put the money in and pay luxury tax bills and do all that kind of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how they approach it as an expansion. And I hope that it would go very well and lead to more expansion because, I mean, you're no stranger to this. Where are the Comets? Come on. Man. The greatest dynasty in all of Texas is not around anymore.
I know.
Come on.
I know. There's been, and I think that's the fun part with this too, is people are wanting in on the money. Like once it becomes less about, oh, I'm supporting a team, we want to bring a team back. It's more like, okay, how can we make some money off of this? Then there's going to be more teams pop up. And that's where the Rockets, what am I trying to say? The Houston Rockets ownership are saying, okay, we want in, we want some money. Like, how can we bring the Comets back? So that would be just perfect to have Cheryl. I don't even know what she would be doing. Just the face, just the greeter, like outside greeting fans.
Courtside every game.
I don't even.
Just chilling.
She would just have to be a part of this somehow. It would be legendary. I know that because she lives closer to Houston and she's having to travel to Dallas right now. And she wants a team closer.
Yeah, we got to make it happen. One day on horse, I'll have to do like a retrospective of Houston's greatest dynasty. And I wish they were still around. I have a Comets pint glass that I drink out of every single day.
Oh like, it's God. Just I love that.
My buddy Grant got it for me because we were bemoaning the loss of the Comets. So they are in dire need to return. And like, I would love to see new cities get in the mix. I would love to see like previous cities that had teams that were good. Like, let's get the Detroit Shock back.
How about like Philly and Boston? I mean, there are so many cities where
I feel
like,
Philly, I think they were just at, I saw something. Someone has like a pile of stickers and it's just a huge bell for Philly. And it just says WNBA Philly. Like they're just advocating for it, passing these out. I'm like, we don't have the money.
Would they be the Liberty Bell spelled B-E-L-L-E-S? No, I don't want that. But I feel like they might do it.
They've already done it. It was a popular AAU team. Breanna Stewart, Brittany Sykes, they played on it together. They were called the Philly Bells. So I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
It is clever. I mean, Jordan, would you say, speaking of expansion, like, is that one of the primary ways that you see the WNBA growing? Like, when you think, like, long-term, 20, 30, 40 years from now, is there a world in which we have 30 WNBA teams, and would that be one of the main ways that it grows? Or is part of what's special about the W the fact that it's like seemingly a more tight-knit, like smaller group of people?
I go back and forth because I do like that it's smaller. I don't know if 30 teams... I don't know. I think it's mostly because I love how we can watch like Sundays in this house. We're watching almost every WNBA team play. Whereas you think of the NBA and you're like, when's the last time you saw a Charlotte game? Like, I don't even know unless they're playing your team.
Right.
It kind of feels like you can be a fan of the league easier rather than just having your one team, even though I'm sure people do. But it is annoying at the same time that the Fever and the Chicago Sky are playing each other weekly. It's like, all right, let's mix it up a little bit. But I think we have to start. I love the expansion teams and they're great. But when you think about everything that goes into an expansion team, it's finding a new city. It's finding an ownership group to front the money. It's adding in a whole logistical thing as part of it too. Where on the map are they going to be? Where it makes sense. One thing that always sucks at the beginning of the season is when teams have to waive players and players get cut and there's only 12 roster spots on a team. So we also have to think of expansion as expanding rosters. Like, wonder if we could get to 15. And then there are developmental players that, you know, it's not all these hardship contracts having to be signed after an injury, or like the crazy story with Cameron Brink's injury. The Sparks were in the middle of a road trip. They had to sign another post player. They signed Queen Egbo. They fly her in from Texas the night before. They overnight a Sparks jersey that used to belong to Kaylee Lou Samuelson. Now, her name's not even on the back. They had to sew tape onto it for her to play the Liberty, and she's just out. She doesn't know the plays. She doesn't know anything. She just got there a few hours ago. She's just there to hoop, and she's playing. Like, it's not like, we're just here for a body. She's actually getting minutes. So if you had an extended roster for something like that to happen, or just to be able to have someone like Nika Mule that has a spot and you know she's going to be with the team for a few years and can eventually grow into that starting point guard position, there's no development right now in the league.
Right.
You have all 1 through 12. You got to be able to play and you got to be able to give me 25. And that's just hard.
And you can't just have like a fun upside pick. Like, I was really excited when the Storm got Jade Melbourne, mainly because her name is Jade Melbourne and she's from Australia, but she's also good. But we basically had her and then it was like a drafting stash and then she's here and then we're not playing her a lot. And then it sucked that this season it was like, we had to trade her because we've chosen Nika Mule over her. It's like, can we not have two exciting young guards and have them battle it out? Like, we have to already preemptively choose one of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's disappointing. So I feel like you've made this point before, and I think we've got team expansion, but I think before we add more teams after these two, let's just expand the rosters. And that comes with money because that'll come with more contracts for more players and stuff. But it sucks that you watch the draft and then once you get into the third round, you're like, well, let's see if any of these people stay on the team. Like, it's so disappointing that you can be an elite college player and then it's like a toss-up. It sucked that like you have to like read the tea leaves of social media. Like, the Storm, it was like, they're posting about Nika Mule a lot, so I think she's gonna make the team. Like, you shouldn't have to do that. Yeah. She was the 12th pick in the draft. Like, this shouldn't be a question.
I know. And it's heartbreaking every single time. And then you get to the business side of it, and then you also say, well, rookies are actually the ones that kind of stay on the team more because they're really, really cheap. So it's more of those middle middle players. You think of an NBA squad, there is a guy's role that's come off the bench and guard somebody, like a really true role player. And in the W, you can't have just one role. You got to be able to drop 25, guard your best player, shoot a three, maybe play a little post, maybe play a little point guard. Like, you got to be
able to
sell
hot dogs at halftime. Yes. You got to do it all.
Yes. You got to run the social media account. Like, you have to do everything. And I think if you expand the roster spots, you can get some more of those role players that maybe are those players who were drafted lower in the draft but could come in and do something really well, just like one thing really well. And since there's no developmental league, you can't call up from there. You got to call them from overseas when they're playing and just hope that they're working on their game in the offseason that could maybe come and help your team. It is just a big toss-up, and I hope we can get less and less of those and just know what we're getting from a roster.
Yeah, for sure.
I think one final thing I wanted to talk to you about before we let you go. We could talk about this for a million years, but you're very busy. You've got stuff to do. One thing that happened recently is Asia Wilson finally got her own signature shoe, and she got her own signature logo, which, thank the Lord, it is not just like A and J turned into a 2 and a 2. Like, it's a cool, like, star A1. Like, it looks awesome. It's fantastic. What do you think just about more women athletes getting signature shoes, especially because you were a hooper all growing up and I'm sure you played in men's shoes? Mm-hmm. Like, how much would it mean for a woman, a little girl, whatever, just being like, oh, cool, I don't have to get LeBron James shoes. I can get Breonna Stewart shoes. I can get Sabrina shoes. Because even dudes in the NBA are wearing Sabrina shoes.
Oh, like, yeah.
I think that's super cool. So especially as your perspective as a woman hooper, like, how cool and how important is that?
It's so important. I mean, it's not only for the little girl that can go to, you know, for me growing up, it was my favorite time, like preseason, going into like a Big Fives or like a sports chalet and being able to pick out my shoes for this season. I know not everybody was able to get new shoes every year, but it was such a bright spot. And I usually gravitated towards, okay, what are the colors of our team this year? Or way over comfort. Like, how do these look? How are these going to be styled? Sure.
That's what I was the exact opposite. when I was a kid, I wanted the like the most boring shoes. Like, I remember when Nike Shocks was everything. I was like, can I just get a shoe with a flat base? Like, what are we doing here? And now I'm the exact opposite person. Boy wearing pink hat and bright orange shirt on this recording.
No, I love the Adidas Pro models where you could switch out the colors.
Oh, I had those in high school. Yeah,
God,
that's
those
fun.
Were everything. So now to be able to imagine a young girl going and having her pick, like, you could be in Nike, maybe you get some Elena Deladons, maybe you get some Sabrinas. I hoop in some Stewies right now. You just have the option and you can be able to channel that player that you're wearing the shoes. That's what it's all about, right? Having a podcast with Cheryl Swoops, who was the first player to have a signature shoe with Nike, the Air Swoops, we have people writing in saying that they didn't even have their actual shoe size, that she just wanted the shoe because it was Air Swoops. And she thought if she put them on, she would play defense like Air Swoops. She would be fast as Air Swoops.
Like
and
Mike
that
style.
Is so cool. And yeah, that's what I want. I want someone to be like, okay, I got the Sabrinas on. I'm about to knock down 5 for 5 from 3 this game. Like, that is so dope to me. But it's also just showing the marketability that these players can sell a shoe and that they deserve that money, that recognition, all of it and more. I just get excited at the thought of not only it's going to be little kids, it's going to be grown women in their old lady leagues like myself trying to go get some Asias so that
and
I
grown
can.
Grown men too.
Yes, hopefully. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To your point about the men wearing Sabrina shoes in the NBA, it's the same thing I say about fandom. Basketball is basketball. A good shoe
yes.
is a good shoe. They
right.
when they say, oh, well, how do you feel about wearing Sabrina's shoes? They don't say, oh, I'm just here to support her. They say, this is a really good shoe. Like, I have such good traction. They're super light. And I love the colorways that they come
in. And
into.
The logo is cool. Yeah.
And that's like it. Like, that's why you're buying the shoe. So that shout out to that for just being, you know, and maybe it's not this whole romanticized thing that I have in my head. It could also just be it's a really good shoe. And that's what we're hoping for the A1, which is perfect and amazing, and the apostrophe is a swish, and it's perfect.
Oh, it's great.
But it's not a steak sauce. It's not a steak sauce. Running was confused by the A1.
A apostrophe one. Yeah, it's going to be good.
Jordan, before we let you go, do you have time for one final question?
Yes, I do.
Okay. There have been way too many hot takes about Caitlin Clark, so I want to ask for a measured, reasonable take. There's been so much discourse all over the media landscape and Twitter, God help us, about the league is out to get Caitlin Clark, the players don't like her, blah, 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 blah. Is that A, completely overstated and not actually what's going on? Or B, is that happening? And if so, why is that happening?
A, final answer. It is completely overstated. It is ridiculous. It is really not to her benefit at all. I don't know who started this campaign of coddling Caitlin Clark, but if you watch her play for 5 seconds, you will see that she is a grown woman that can handle her own business and talk her own trash. She needs no coddling. And it has just put this weird pressure around her, which she's not the one saying this. It is the grown men that are feeling the need to protect their sweet Caitlin Clark.
There's a lot of white knighting going on.
Yeah, it's strange, honestly. And it's strange for someone who is a competitor to say that because they're playing hard defense on me, they're out to get me. Like, that's from someone that's not good, right? If you go into a game and you're like, oh my gosh, they're out to get me. That's why I can't score. She's still dropping 25 points. Like, she had a franchise record 13 assists on Sunday. She's fine, and she's going to be fine because she's a really good basketball player. The whole context and the whole storyline of these hard fouls, these, you know, the Kennedy Carter foul, yes, was not a basketball play. It deserved to be upgraded to a flagrant one, and then we move on. This is
it's a super normal flagrant one. Like,
right.
This happens in the NBA daily.
And what can't happen is you can't watch the game and not see the trash talking that Caitlin Clark is doing, because she can. Whatever. She's a hooper. She's going to do that. And I support that because everybody's talking trash. Right. So you're talking trash. Kennedy Carter has a very, very short fuse, which she has a history of in her career. So you talk trash to the wrong one, you get hip checked. And then we move on, because then it's a basketball game and now we're really cooking.
Yeah.
The whole discourse with Angel Reese and Nelissa Smith, and they're chatting, and then the refs start to get involved and Nelissa Smith waves them off like, it's fine. We're just playing basketball. Yeah. This is what we do. So it happens so much, and we hear it in the NBA all the time, and no one is telling, say Bronny James is about to get drafted. Say he does. Maybe not. Whatever. He gets in the NBA. Is Stephen A going to say, oh, don't foul Bronny hard? No. Do you know who his dad is? Like, don't do that. They're out to get him. They're out to get him because of his dad. No. Someone is going to chuck Bronny and make him soar through the rafters because of who his dad is and because they know he should not be in whatever jersey that he is in.
Yeah.
That is going to happen, and that is a part of the game. But this whole notion, the worst take of all, is that the WNBA players aren't playing the game within the game, that they need to be letting her score more points because then that's going to bring more eyes on the league.
That's
if you guys are making her lose, then that's going to tarnish everything that she's grown. What? This is a competition. Yeah. Why would I let somebody win? I don't let my husband win at Uno. I'm not going to check up and have somebody. What?
I think it's also it even started preseason. I think it was just disingenuous, like, reads on the situation. Because I remember, like, the first thing I saw, it was like a headline. It was like, WNBA legend Gianna Taurasi trash talks Caitlin Clark. And I was like, ooh, I love DT trash talk. What did she say? And then it's like, she said there have been other players in the league for years. Like,
can I tell you something,
it's just
Mike?
Everyone
literally
trying to,
an hour ago before we recorded this, I, like an idiot, clicked on clickbait, and it said Gianna Taurasi with four blunt words before her game against Caitlin Clark. I click on the article. Her four blunt words were, yeah, it'll be fun. What are we doing?
I just feel like it's everyone trying to read it in the most negative possible light to paint this picture. And you made the exact point that I've been saying, Jordan. Like, Caitlin's not out here complaining. It's everyone complaining on her behalf. I don't think anyone's really, truly trashing her in egregious ways. If the worst thing that's happening is a normal basketball thing where people either talk trash or hard foul or whatever, like, that's part of the sport, and we don't talk about it for a week straight.
Oh, my God.
Unless it's like Draymond Green kicking someone in the nuts, but like still, a normal
not a
flagrant?
Week. I will
yeah,
say.
Yeah, true, like 2 days.
That is a two-day cycle, and we move on, and that is not the same thing. And I'm like, Draymond Green has had so many of these fouls, yeah. And we need to talk about his mental state sure. more than we need to talk about what is going on with Caitlin Clark. And I think I'll just say this. The whole idea of this, that we're coddling her or whatever, is hurting mostly because the basketball is actually good. Like, it mm-hmm, would be mm-hmm. different if, and I say this all the time, if the W wasn't ready for this moment. But the WNBA is so ready for it. And these past couple years have just been building up to this talent-wise, matchup-wise, storyline-wise. Like, we are ready for this boom. And if the games were atrocious and bad, then I get it. Like, all right, we didn't step up to the plate. I guess we got to talk about this Caitlin discourse. But it's not. The games are good. And Asia Wilson is having unbelievable numbers and an MVP season already. And we're talking about Caitlin Clark getting fouled. And that's what doesn't make any sense to me. When there were hundreds of fouls over the course of the weekend, we talk about one.
It's so, clicks. It's all about clicks. That's all it is.
And it is. And I'm in the media, so I can't knock when L. Duncan says more people turn on when we talk about Caitlin Clark. I get it. I understand that. But how can we switch that conversation to her play? Like, mm-hmm. can we yes. talk about yes. the Fever's offense and how now it's revolving around Aaliyah Boston, and you can like throw Caitlin Clark's name in there, but don't make it ridiculous. I think there's still
a way to
reach those
numbers. Oh, so now you
want to
throw Caitlin Clark. Real nice, Jordan. Real nice.
The basketball is good. Let's talk about the basketball. Jordan, thank you for talking to us about basketball. If people want to hear you talking about basketball, where can they find you talking about basketball?
Well, I never showed up about basketball, so you can find me anywhere talking about it. You can follow me on X at HeyJordanR or on Instagram at JordanLiggins. And make sure to subscribe to the Queens of the Court podcast.
Yes, do that. Do that. I am very excited to continue to listen to it, especially when things like expansion become more real and it's things that I'm like, how does this work? I'm tuning in to be like, okay, so how many players get protected? Who's up for grabs? Who do I need to be worried about? The Valkyrie stealing from me.
It's like a big game of Red Rover, and it's going to be great.
That's really what's happening. I guess we're going to kind of start that conversation of like, who needs to be playing for the Valkyries right now? Like, there are some role players that need to have those good games. We talk about it in the NBA all the time, their contract years. This is their expansion year. Who needs to be balling out for the Valkyries to take notice? It's going to be fun.
Should be good.
Thank you so
Jordan,
much.
Thank
Jordan.
You for joining. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Thanks so much, guys. Always fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Horse. Horse is hosted by Adam Amawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kenzie Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Kambamanas. The art is by Allison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Burge, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Don't Go Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry is investing in seltzer. Hi, Trish, Jason Derulo, Haley Zink, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby as a vampire, Chelsea's cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Walls, Artie Party, and Max Furley. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops was run by someone who was doing those like really stupid WNBA comments and all that, and they got banned.
As they should, and as AJ was from our softball team. How about that?
Yes.
You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to many of the fun things we talked about today and also information on where to see Mike and I. Mike and me? Mike and I? Mike and Ike? Either way, to see us live and in person.
Yes. And if you want to support the Horse Boys and watch all of our NBA Finals per game recaps or listen to bonus audio, so many other things, you can head on over to patreon.com/horsehoops and you can go to horsehoops.com/merch to get some nerd shirts and other digital items. But we'll close this episode out by saying something on the count of three. I feel like we got to just give love to the Dog Pound, our team, right? Like,
do
we just say Dog Pound on three? I just want to fully commemorate this championship
absolutely.
Run. What
Let's
a time.
What a great, great time.
Dog Pound on three.
One, two, three.
Dog Pound.
Gosh. Oh, we all had, we so had that. We had that dog in us, didn't we?
We had the dog in us, and we got to defend the title. Now we got to defend it.
I cannot freaking wait.